1029 The Hog presents another Bob and Brian podcast.
This Bob and Brian podcast is brought to you by Movie Tavern by Marcus. This new year, purchase a 2020 Ultimate Popcorn Tub. Unlimited popcorn for only $4.95 every visit for the whole year. Because movies never tasted so good.
Time to talk music news with our guy, Gary Graff. Good morning, Gary. How are you?
All right. How are you guys doing today?
Very well.
Good, good. So what were you doing today 56 years ago in 1964?
Well, I was probably out of the diaper phase.
Okay. Oh, I would hope.
Pretty sure.
I would hope.
You're not usually still crapping yourself at five.
Was heading back into it? Or?
Not yet so far.
I'm just a few years away from re-entering that time.
64, anyway. Starting kindergarten.
I was a year away from kindergarten. We didn't have nursery school then. We just started a kindergarten. We all know that.
Well, today there were a bunch of teenagers at JFK Airport in New York, because this is the day 56 years ago that the Beatles arrived in America.
I remember the older folks talking about how they looked like girls with the long hair
in suits. And I believe, did they have trench coats on, too, or just their suits when they got off?
It was just the suits.
Okay.
I have to go back and
performed in suits? They performed in suits?
We've seen this footage, a lot of them disembarking, and, of course, all the kids at the airport, and the screaming, and then the press conference.
They performed in suits and ties.
Do we know where that spot was at the airport that they disembarked, they came down the stairs? Is there an X or anything?
I'm pretty sure it was one of the regular Pan Am gates.
That had to
be. That was back in the day before they had the tunnels.
Yeah.
You know, so you actually had to get off. They rolled the staircase up to the plane.
Right.
And you disembarked, so they were able to, you know, the fans were able to see them. And it was quite a
But there's not a amazing. Plaque or anything there. It was on this spot that the Beatles disembarked from that plane. Or is there just another?
It may well be. It was historic enough.
There's not just a gas pump or a terminal built over that spot now?
That I don't know.
Okay. All right, but that was what, 1964 that happened?
February 7th.
They got here. All right, let's start with the big one. Was that the greatest Super Bowl halftime ever?
I don't know if I'd call it the greatest, but it was certainly really, really entertaining. I mean, you know, I think there are people of a certain our age who were ready not to like this, but, you know, it was basically Up With People 2020. You know, a lot of singing, a lot of dancing.
Come on.
It was. I mean, this was
Up With People was so.
This is the 2020 equivalent of an Up With People show. It was, you know,
really,
it was
really
fun. Because it was lighthearted. It was a lot of dancing, a lot of glitz. They didn't have this kind of dancing and glitz back when Up With People.
No, but I would call Up With People very vanilla.
Well, oh sure.
And this wasn't that.
This was very. This was very Latino.
I haven't heard anybody, whether you like J-Lo or Shakira, whatever, complain about it.
Oh, I have. I've heard there was a lot of hating going on during it.
What were the complaints? Not enough.
Social media. You know, it was just, you know, boomers saying, you know, where's my Tom Petty or Rolling Stone?
Yeah. We did those. We've run those through already. Springsteen, the Stones, all of that. We've run all that through. We're moving on, right?
Well, I would, yes, absolutely. I hope so. And this one, listen, it was exciting. It was fun to watch. The visuals were terrific on the stage. So, you know, the tongue thing that Shakira did was actually a Middle Eastern cultural thing that you hear that a lot of women do in that culture during a celebration.
But the thing that she did wrong was your tongue is to stay in your mouth. You shouldn't be sticking your tongue out and doing it. So she delivered that wrong. It was offensive to half the world.
Except the Qawwali singers, you know, from the Middle East, their tongues come out when they're doing it. It's, you know, it's the try it. It's not the easiest thing to control.
matter of style.
I'm okay. I'm probably not going to try it, Gary. But, okay, so not the greatest Super Bowl halftime ever. What one was?
Oh, it's hard. You know, I mean, I'm still partial to the Aerosmith one, where he also had NSYNC and Britney Spears and I forget who else. I think it was Nelly or somebody. But I thought that was a great one. The U2 one after 9/11, you know, the year after 9/11, I thought it was really, you know, it's hard to have one that was more emotionally resonant, you know, than that. Prince, courses up there. You know, would I would put this one probably in the top five.
Okay, fair enough. I asked you to rank them, and you did. Guess what Brian just found?
What did Brian find?
Beatles arrival at JFK plaque.
There you go.
Yeah.
What does it say where it is? Is it just in the airport, or is it on a particular spot?
No, I haven't listened to
it. All right. What's going on with Soundgarden?
Well, you know, we had talked a couple of weeks back about how Chris Cornell's widow, Vicky, was suing the band over ownership of material, songs that had been recorded before Chris Cornell's death, and the band has finally slapped back with their own claim. You know, Vicky Cornell's contention is that these were recordings that Chris made in his personal studio in Florida back in 2017. The band is saying, no, this stuff goes as far back as 2015 and were made in Seattle, New York, and while on the road, not in Florida, that these are band recordings and they belong to the band. They also countered her claim that Soundgarden was purposely withholding money from Vicky Cornell in order to pressure her into giving up ownership of these recordings. The band was saying, no, right now everything's frozen for the time being. Nobody's getting money out of Soundgarden, so you're wrong about that. And they also dispute her claim that they were uncaring after they got news of Chris Cornell's suicide, saying they were on buses headed to their next gig in Columbus, Ohio. Chris was going to fly to that gig, and, you know, I don't know what she felt like the band should have done when they learned of it. Obviously, they didn't play that show, you know, in Columbus and, you know, returned home and took care of the memorials and everything. So this is going to get ugly, and it's going to get vicious. You know, right now, I guess Vicky has possession of these tracks, and the band is saying, no, you know, they're owned by the band, and, you know, of which Vicky Cornell is one quarter of, as the heir of Chris Cornell's estate, and, you know, they want her to participate in a group decision about their future.
So how long will this take to sort out, or will it end in court?
You know, certainly months, and I wouldn't be surprised if it stretched into a year or two.
You talked to Huey Lewis this week?
I did.
How is he?
We were able to catch up. He, of course, has a new album coming out a week from today called Weather. Get it, the news, sports,
weather. That's a long time to finish that.
He was looking
to wait for the weather.
He was looking at the big picture, though, when he did that. I'll give him credit. If you got a 40-year plan for your albums, good for you.
And didn't he have some
pretty cool? But yeah, a lot of our talk, of course, was about his situation now. He has Meniere's disease, which affects his hearing to the point where he can't sing and perform. And he told me it comes and goes. He has good days and bad days. He has kind of a 1 to 10 scale. For him, the day we spoke, he said it was about a 5 or a 6.
So how did he do an album?
And, you know, and some days it's a 2. And, you know, he's had days where it's been up to 8 and 9, and he'll schedule a rehearsal with the band to see if they can do something. And, you know, of course, by the time they're actually ready to get in the room, it's bad again. So, you know, you can hear his frustration, you can hear a degree of sorrow and even despair when he talks about it. But in the meantime, you know, he's keeping busy. They have the album coming out. They have a musical, The Heart of Rock and Roll, that it looks like it's going to go to Broadway, so he's excited about that. There is a documentary being made that they're starting to work on, and, you know, he's talking about doing a memoir now, and he can still write songs. So, you know, he has a lot to do. It's just, you know, he can't do the thing he likes best, which is singing and performing.
Who does his material? I mean, who does the songs that he writes?
Oh, you mean records?
Who performs them, right?
They haven't been covered a lot. But yeah, that's the idea. There's one song, for instance, on Weather that he was actually commissioned to write for Willie Nelson, and it's a country song, and Willie Nelson wound up not using the producer who commissioned Huey to write the song, but, you know, he's a good songwriter, and he's collaborated with people throughout his career, so he certainly could do something.
We have a James Hetfield spotting for the first time rehab.
Right, yeah, he has come out of not hiding. You know, he went to rehab, did not hide it, and he showed up at the Peterson Automotive Museum to open his exhibit. A bunch of his cars are going on exhibit there. And, you know, he was asked about Metallica and what's ahead. And, you know, he said, we don't know. And he said one of the magic, part of the magic of Metallica, or the beauty of Metallica, is they don't know what's coming next. They sit down and figure it out, figure out what works best with them. They are, you know, he will be back on stage with them starting March 29th at a benefit concert in San Francisco. And then they've got a bunch of tour dates around the world this year, including five U.S. festivals, Lollapalooza and Chicago being one of them. So, you know, it sounds like he's back out. He's healthy again. You know, good for him for knowing that he had to go in, not let it get to the point where it did the first time he went to rehab, where they practically broke up the band. This time he knew he just had to take time off and take care of himself and then get back to it.
What's this Chuck Berry documentary going to be like? He's a interesting subject.
Yeah, this is a new documentary that's coming out at the end of the month on PBS. I guess the first air dates are going to be February 29th, and, you know, basically check your local listings. But it's just a celebration of Chuck Berry, of his career, and it includes footage of a lot of other people performing his songs. So, you know, the Beatles doing Roll Over Beethoven at their first U.S. concert, the Rolling Stones doing Around and Around, Jeff Lynne's ELO doing Roll Over Beethoven, Springsteen, Jimi Hendrix.
Okay, so this
a bunch
isn't
of others' performances will be part of this documentary.
So this isn't like an American Experience thing where they take a deep look into him, or
I'm not sure it's a deep look, but it's a look. Okay. And yeah, you know, listen, it's PBS. It's going to be deeper than the norm.
Yeah.
All right. Since we're on to documentaries and movies, they're doing a Skynyrd movie. I thought the band agreed we will never sell that story.
Well, this was, you know, the band said that, but the drummer Artemas Powell changed his mind, and so he basically made Street Survivors the true story of the Lynyrd Skynyrd plane crash, which he, you know, he's gone on record as saying this is my story. You know, it's not the full official band story, but it's my story. And then the band hung it up in legalities, but now I guess, you know, they've settled because it's coming out. It's going to be shown. It's going to be premiered February 16th, so, you know, 9 days from now at a film festival in Los Angeles, and then it's going to open in theaters this spring. It's going to be one of those staggered releases where, you know, it opens in some places 1 week, some places another week, and there will be a soundtrack coming out in June.
Is there Skynyrd music in the soundtrack during the movie, or is
I believe
that
there is some? Yeah, I haven't seen the track list for it, but I think part of the settlement was he could use some Skynyrd music in it.
All right, so we got that coming out. You got the Chuck Berry thing going on, and then there's a book and a movie about John Lennon's final year.
Yeah, this is John Lennon's final year, which was 1980. Both a book and a movie. The film is called John Lennon: The Final Year. Being produced by Rita Films, and meanwhile Ken Womack, who's a noted Beatles author, has written a new book called John Lennon 1980: The Final Days in the Life of Beatle John, and that'll be published in October, which would have been, and October 9th is going to be what would have been Lennon's 80th birthday.
80, wow. And the Beach Boys are fighting over hunting?
Yeah, I mean, the fight's kind of over in that, you know, what happened was the Mike Love Beach Boys, which lease their name from, you know, from the Beach Boys ownership group. So
yeah.
Brian Wilson is still an owner of the Beach Boys, but he leases the band name to Mike Love to go use. Well, I guess Mike Love ran afoul of the rest of the guys because he booked a gig at the Safari Club International Convention, which was actually just two nights ago in Reno, Nevada. And this is a trophy hunters group collection. And so Brian Wilson and Al Jardine were like, no, 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 we don't put the Beach Boys' name in a place like that. And they actually started a GoFundMe petition that got 114,000 signatures. And, you know, in all the verbiage and everything, you know, Brian Wilson, you know, said, this is not what we do. Look at the cover of Pet Sounds. We love animals. You know, this is an inappropriate place for them to play. You know, a lot of fans agreed. Mike Love went ahead and did with it anyway. You know, tweeted out his own message, you know, saying that he was looking forward to the gig and looking forward to, you know, to supporting freedom of thought, expression as a fundamental tenet of our rights as Americans.
Does any other band have an arrangement like that where you know, okay, you can be a Beach Boy, but you can only rent the name for a while.
Well, and you can only play at approved venues.
Well, I'm not sure what the Beach Boys agreement, you know, if that even allows the other owners of the Beach Boys to attempt what Brian Wilson and Al Jardine just did. But for instance, Foreigner is in a situation where Mick Jones is still the owner of Foreigner, but he leases the band to the current singer and bass player, and he, as part of that lease agreement, he makes special, what are considered special appearances with Foreigner. So it's a very interesting arrangement.
When you say
this seat out, I think
to another guy that I have to sit here and talk to.
He'll be Brian, but it won't be. He'll just rent the name and the chair.
So when Mick Jones rents out the band, the name, does whoever's renting it, the lead singer, does he pay? Is there just a set amount, or is Mick Jones get whatever, you know, part of the gate, or how does that work?
I think it could be all of the above.
Okay.
I think each of these deals are different.
I'm gonna rent you the band for the week. What?
Dad, can I borrow the car keys?
Right, that's kind of what it's like. I'm gonna take the band.
These are interesting arrangements, and this is how you're going to see some of these classic rock acts perpetuate themselves. As the original members decide they don't want to tour and perform anymore, they will, you know, lease the name to the current members to go use, and these bands can still tour on the road.
Well, we've sort of been softened up for this idea by membership in bands changing like the cast of Law and Order. I mean, it's still the show, but, you know.
And also, you talk about the case of a band like Foreigner, you know, for better or for worse, you know, the Foreigners, the Bostons, the Loverboys, some of these bands. These were largely faceless bands. The members never became bigger than the band.
I don't have a problem with it, but if I'm going to see a band and I bought the record in 1979 and I look up on stage and go,
1979.
Which one? Now, I know you guys have gotten older. Who's who? And they're going, oh, none of us were there. Not one of us was on that cover.
Right.
Then I'm feeling like I'm just, I don't know, I'm a Holiday Inn, a lounge act kind of thing.
You're seeing a tribute. These are glorified tribute acts.
Yeah.
They are sanctioned by the original members. And, you know, I guess in the case of Mick Jones and Foreigner, he's toured with these guys a lot. So they have experience playing with the founder of the band. That gives them a different kind of legitimacy. But, yeah, it changes my interest.
Okay. That guy over there went to see a band called Eagles with...
With whom?
Who's it? Vince Gill filling in for?
Vince Gill is now playing the part of Glenn Fry.
Right.
Is that a
tribute band?
Well, no, because Don Henley and Joe Walsh are still there, even though they fired Don Felder.
Right.
There are still
there's not all those Randy Meisner hits that aren't there.
There's people
still
who
sing those.
Won't go see the Eagles because Bernie Ledden and Randy Meisner are gone.
Those Randy Meisner songs were written by Henley, Fry, and Meisner.
But they might sound different.
They sound way different. Way different.
If you really like the songs, go see the band. I mean, it's not there's nothing criminal about any of this at all.
Arrest that man!
it's not like the fake Fleetwood Mac of the 70s.
Yeah,
it's funny you bring up Fleetwood Mac, because didn't Mick Fleetwood come out and say we're not going to tour anymore? Not that they're not going to do shows, but they're not going to go.
They're not going to do the big long touring anymore.
Yeah, so Las Vegas would be a great spot for
Fleetwood Mac, wouldn't it?
Perfect
for that. I bet you can expect it to happen.
Yeah, that would be a perfect landing spot for them for, you know, a year or two. If you wanted to see Fleetwood Mac, hey, we're not going to come and see you anymore. Why don't you come and see us?
That's the model of Vegas.
Yeah. It's a great idea.
Yep.
I want to buy a band now and just shuffle
the dudes
around.
I don't know. What band?
I'll have to look around to invest.
What band could he buy, Gary?
What's a good band to buy? You're fired. We're going to get these other guys.
Would you be interested in Head East from our clearance bin?
No,
that's fine.
We need a few big singles.
Foghat.
Foghat wouldn't be a bad one.
Okay, Foghat. Would you be interested in Foghat?
I don't know.
I don't know that you can afford Boston.
We'd have Foghat with a side of April Wine.
And finally, Gary, before we go, Guns N' Roses announced their North American tour, and they're coming here.
They are not only coming to Milwaukee, they are opening the tour in Milwaukee.
Is that a good thing or a Do we want them to work the kinks out first?
These guys have been on the road a lot recently. There aren't going to be kinks to work out.
Okay.
They're going to be in fine shape.
Are they happy?
They sound like it. I talked to Slash last October, I want to say, and he said, you know, right now everything's going well. Axel is not as much of a head case as he once was. So he's, so they're talking about making new music together, and I think it's everybody's happy.
All right, here's the deal. The Hog welcomes Guns N' Roses to the American Family Insurance Amphitheater during Summerfest, 4th of July. Get all the details at our website, 1029thehog.com. All right, Gary, good run this morning.
Okay, thanks.
All right. It sounds like you're exhausted. It sounds like you got a towel around your neck already.
I'm actually one step towards the massage table.
All right, Gary, thanks for the time. We'll talk to you next week.
Have a great weekend.
Gary Graff, our music guy, on Friday mornings around here.